It is Tuesday, April 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Coming up, I speak to our national correspondent to find out why today is a potentially pivotal moment in the U.S. presidential primary races. A sports attorney tells us why FIFA's new president should be concerned about his name appearing in the Panama Papers. And a British-born actor takes up the challenge of playing an American country music icon in a brand new movie.
And I had never yodeled before, you know, and you have to do so much. There's so much technically that you have to do with your voice.
It's all ahead in International Edition. In the U.S. Midwestern state of Wisconsin, voters are going to the polls for the Democratic and Republican presidential primaries. Republican U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and Democratic Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont are hoping for wins in their respective races to help them overcome the leaders for their party's nominations. Well, for more on that, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone is with me in the studio. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Michael.
So how important is it for Ted Cruz to beat Republican front runner Donald Trump tonight?
It's very important for Ted Cruz, but there are broader implications as well. It's very important for those in the Republican Party who want to stop Donald Trump. This is their best opportunity to date to slow him down as he moves toward the nomination. If they can continue to deny him delegates as we go through the rest of the primaries and caucuses, it will make it likely that Trump cannot come into the convention in Cleveland in July with the 1,237 delegate commitments he needs to secure the nomination. So a Cruz victory in Wisconsin, and the polls suggest he's ahead, would go a long way toward making it more likely we're going to have a very interesting, contested, potentially divisive convention.
Can you explain, I know it's very complicated, but how are the delegates chosen in the Republican race for Wisconsin?
Sure, and this, again, pertains just to Wisconsin in this case, but there's a total of 42 delegates at stake. 18 of them will be at stake statewide. What does that mean? Whoever wins the most votes statewide will get the 18. You start with that. And then they have 8 congressional districts. A lot of these things are based, by the way, on congressional districts, so we should point that out at the beginning. And so in each congressional district, there are 3 delegates at stake, so that's where the other 24 come from. And so whoever wins those congressional districts individually will get those 3 delegates from the district.
Right, so it could be that if Ted Cruz wins, which is what the polls are indicating, he could end up with the most delegates, but Donald Trump may sneak in with a couple.
He could, but I think the Trump people would like more than a few, because if Cruz can win the lion's share, that really does make it more pressure on Trump in the upcoming primaries to do better. So
right.
Far, Trump has won 47% of the delegates. He needs to improve on that to get the convention number before the convention. He'd have to win 55% of the remaining delegates. So that's a tall order.
Well, let's look quickly at the Democratic side. Bernie Sanders is slightly favored in the polling over Hillary Clinton. Will it be enough for him if he wins tonight?
It's important for him to keep the momentum going. He's won 5 out of the past 6 contests. He'd like to keep that going. But again, because of the delegate allocation on the Democratic side, they're still, both going to win delegates. So the problem for Bernie Sanders is he can't just have to win these contests. He has to win them hugely to get enough delegates
to
make
up
ground. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. And he needs to do that to make up ground on Hillary Clinton, and it's just a tall order. They're already looking ahead, by the way, to the next primary in 2 weeks in the state of New York. That'll be a very big show.
Yeah, that race isn't over either. Well, thank you so much to our national correspondent, Jim Malone.
Thank you.
Well, let's turn to our social media segment now. And International Edition's G. Abby Lee is sitting to my right. Hi, G. What's trending online today with the Wisconsin primary?
Surprise, surprise. It's hashtag Wisconsin primary. And on social media, like Jim mentioned earlier, it's all eyes are on whether Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders can maintain the momentum to turn the tide around hugely. On the Republican side, it looks like what Melania Trump said Monday at a rally is not helping her husband, Donald Trump. She was speaking in Wisconsin, and a number of media outlets shared clips from that speech on Facebook. CNN is one of them, and one of the most memorable lines was, As you know now, when you attack him, he will punch back 10 times harder. His supporters really enjoy that line. What do you think about that, Michael?
Well, he really does punch back when you attack Trump. What was the response like in the comment section to that remark?
So one of the top replies to that Facebook post received almost 5,000 likes, and it reads like this. When you attack him, he will punch back 10 times harder. When you don't attack him, he will punch anyway. If he doesn't, he will get his all-too-eager supporters to throw the punches for him. Yeah, he's a fighter, been fighting reality and common decency since he started his clown act. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to find too many comments by Trump supporters in that particular thread, but that may also be because it's from CNN and not Fox News.
Right, well, the CNN isn't, CNN viewers may not be the biggest fans of Donald Trump.
Maybe not, yeah.
But what else have you seen on Twitter?
So I realize that Melania Trump is actually on Twitter, and her handle is at Melania Trump. She's not as prolific as her husband, but then who is, right? So to give you a taste of her tweets, here's one from last summer. She posted a picture of her Chanel purse, sunglasses, and a cup of cappuccino, and used the hashtags black and white, Monday, NYC, and style. So that's the general idea of like the things that she posts. And her tweets may be sporadic because she's not that fluent in English yet. Just like Trump's first wife, Melania Trump was born and raised in Central Europe, and both of them actually came to America to pursue their modeling and socialite career, if you will, here. Michael?
Well, I'm sure we'll find out more about the life of Melania Trump going forward. Thanks so much, G. You can find G on Twitter at G Abby Lee. And she tweets for us on the VOA IE Twitter account, which is at VOA underscore IE. Well, moving on, Iceland's prime minister resigned on Tuesday, becoming the first casualty from the Panama Papers' disclosures about the hidden offshore investments of the wealthy, powerful, and famous from around the world. In another revelation from the papers, an investigative journalism project that was published on Sunday, the new head of World Football has seen his name appear in documents that were leaked from a Panamanian law firm. Well, David Larkin is a Washington-based attorney specializing in the issue of corruption in world sport. And I asked him today about the significance of FIFA president Gianni Infantino being linked to the Panama Papers revelations.
Well, the significance is that Mr. Infantino was elected under the idea of a new day for FIFA. You know, there was much fanfare that he was going to be new blood and the new leader. And for his name to emerge, I think for some people who aren't FIFA observers, it's surprising. But for those of us who've watched for a long time, one would realize pretty quickly that Mr. Infantino is far from new blood, but is in fact a long-term insider. So it's of no surprise that his name would emerge in relation to FIFA matters.
What is he alleged to have done that is raising eyebrows?
Well, he's not accused of any wrongdoing at this point. What's raising eyebrows is the fact that about a decade ago, UEFA did media deals, and one of the media deals that UEFA did business with was a company allegedly called Cross Trading, which is a subsidiary of a company called Full Play. Well, Full Play, if you've been watching the FIFA scandal unfold, is one of the companies named in the indictment by U.S. prosecutors, and it's owned by two individuals who are under indictment by United States Department of Justice. And the link between Mr. Infantino and that company now, at this point, simply raises questions about what was going on and what may or may not have occurred.
And just to clarify, Infantino was an official with UEFA at the time that those contracts were signed. Is that right?
That is correct. So what he would have been doing is his job. But you know, it really just raises a lot of questions around the transaction because these companies really are alleged to have done improper things surrounding these types of transactions. So the natural question is what happened in this particular case? And I think those are the questions that we're going to see pursued going forward.
Well, Infantino said that he just signed off on these deals with Cross Trading, but never dealt with the company directly. So it seems like he thinks he's in the clear. Should he be concerned?
Well, I think that a lot more questions need to be answered, especially when the specific allegation by U.S. prosecutors is that these individuals were in the business of offering bribes for transactions of this sort. That's the allegation. And here we have an instance where we have such a transaction. And the natural question is if these people are allegedly corrupt now, were they corrupt then? And I think that's what we're going to be looking at in the next few months.
Well, thank you very much to sports attorney David Larkin for speaking to International Edition.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Sleep. The average adult needs 7 to 9 hours of it per night, and children need even more, up to 11 hours per night. People who are sleep deprived suffer a variety of problems, such as lower alert levels and cognitive ability. Now, U.S. scientists are adding another side effect, higher food intake. University of Chicago researchers followed 14 volunteers in their 20s for 4 days. Half were allowed to get a full night's sleep, but the others were restricted to 4.5 hours per night. The researchers found that even though they'd eaten full meals, the sleep-deprived subjects still ate more, and when they did, they chose high-fat and protein snacks. The authors of the study, published in the journal Sleep, say their sample was small, but the results suggest that sleep restriction leads not only to increased caloric intake, but also to higher pleasure-seeking eating. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
I'm Michael Lippin with VOA's International Edition. Greek and EU officials are working to determine which migrants detained in Greece will be the next to be deported to Turkey under the terms of a controversial deal between the EU and Ankara. No deportations from Greece to Turkey were scheduled for Tuesday, a day after the first deportations were carried out with several ferry crossings from the Greek island of Lesbos. Our correspondent Luis Ramirez was on Lesbos earlier Tuesday. My colleague Susan Yaki asked him what he had learned about the deportation process.
Despite the protests of human rights activists, international human rights activists who are on the island, those deportations will continue for the time being. While no ferries were scheduled to leave on Tuesday, the government, the EU and Greece are processing cases. That means that they're determining who will be sent back at this point. Of course, there are an estimated 3,000 people detained in a camp who are possibly eligible for deportation. Authorities making that determination as we speak to see who else is going to go this week. What they do is they accumulate as many people to deport in order to fill spaces on a ferry, charter that ferry, and then send it, and then go ahead and start loading them for the trip, which is just under 2 hours to Turkey.
And the human rights group, what is their complaint?
Their complaint, their chief complaint at this moment is that there is no transparency in terms of the deportation process. They want to know how it is that that the authorities are making the determination of who gets deported, who can apply for asylum. They say that process just has not been clear, and that is their main complaint. Now, at the same time, we have another dispute going on that both Turkey and Greece are working to resolve. Greece accuses Turkey of not doing enough to stem the influx. The migrants, despite the prospect of being deported, continue to arrive. In fact, where I'm standing, there are some is a point where there are rescuers, volunteer rescuers from other parts of Europe, who are on standby all the time, waiting. They get eyewitnesses. They got phone calls saying that observers have pointed to people in trouble off the coast. They go out, rescue them, make sure that nobody dies in the process, and then bring them ashore. Once they come ashore, they are being detained, taken to camps, their case is assessed, and then they're put in line for either resettlement in the EU or return to Turkey.
Well, that was VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez speaking to International Edition's Susan Yaki from the Greek island of Lesbos. Well, the refugee crisis in Greece has cast a shadow over the Greek-American community. Greek-Americans recently celebrated Greek National Independence Day with a parade in Greek town Baltimore, not far from Washington. VOA's Penelope Pulu joined the parade and asked some of those participating to share their thoughts about the refugee situation.
On a sun-drenched day, the parade rolled out on the central street of Baltimore's Greek town, marking Greece's national sovereignty since 1821. Greek Americans danced on the old country's anniversary of national independence from the Ottoman Empire. As the parade harkened back to different eras of Greek history, spectators applauded. The festivities also had a bittersweet tone for many Greek Americans there, worried about the refugee crisis engulfing Greece. Mulling over the European Union's decision to deport refugees from Greece to Turkey, John Pallas braces for the worst.
It's just going to cause massive upheaval in the country of Greece, and they're not able to control that. And it's going to be a problem. And they're not getting any assistance from the rest of Europe. They're getting criticism that Greece is not closing their borders and not protecting European borders. It's kind of tough to protect all those islands. It's not like you could build a wall across the, you know, the sea.
Apostolos Kakaes criticizes what he calls an inexperienced Greek government for the long-standing refugee problem. As for Turkey's role in returning refugee boats from Greek islands into Turkey,
Greece should be front and center in coordinating how those controls are exercised so that the sovereignty of Greece is not violated and that Turkey does its piece in controlling the crowds.
Since the terrorist attacks in Europe, Maria Fotiadis, a first-generation immigrant herself in the U.S., regards most migrants in Greece as a threat.
When we came here, we were immigrants. The world was totally different. We were more honest. We worked hard. Our parents worked really hard. And we didn't harm anybody else. So I feel like the world has changed. So it's not like the good old days.
But Mrs. Emilia, a Greek American with her heart still left back in the old country, has a different view about the fate of the refugees.
Where should they go? Return them? Easier said than done. How about some humanity? Many of those critics' ancestors were refugees themselves.
A stark reminder under the gaze of Greek and American flags in a country of immigrants. Penelope Poulou, VOA News, Baltimore, Maryland.
This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
A newly published study suggests that due to human activity, Earth is entering an age of plastic, as our planet's waters and land will be buried in layers of plastic waste by mid-century. The study's lead author, Jan Zalaschwitz, says that discarded plastic can be found everywhere, from the tops of mountains to deep beneath the oceans. Despite its increased use, plastics don't degrade as easily as natural materials like paper and wood. According to the World Watch Institute, nearly 300 million tons of plastic are made every year. It was reported that in the U.S. alone, only 7% of all plastics generated in 2009 was recycled, with the remainder deposited in landfills and elsewhere. The study suggests that plastic will have a long-lasting impact on Earth's geology as it becomes a part of the soil and eventually a unique part of its strata. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. A new film about the late American country music icon Hank Williams, I Saw the Light, has opened in U.S. theaters. As David Byrd reports, it stars two actors who made their mark in Marvel comic action movies.
Many filmgoers will know Tom Hiddleston from his work as Loki, the bad boy brother of Thor in the Marvel action movies Thor, Thor the Dark World, and The Avengers. But now the British-born, Cambridge-educated Hiddleston is playing a very American icon, Hank Williams. The Olivier Award-winning actor says one of the biggest challenges he had to face with singer, songwriter, and voice coach Rodney Crowell was whether he could yodel.
And I had never yodeled before, you know, and it is an interesting, it you have to do so much. There's so much technically that you have to do with your voice, but it's also about sort of yielding. It's about freedom. You have to let it all happen. You can't force it.
Crowell says that it took a little doing and a little prompting, but eventually Hiddleston was able to get it. Crowell, the Grammy-winning writer of such country hits as I Couldn't Leave You If I Tried and After All This Time, said authenticity was the key to playing someone as revered as Hank Williams.
From the very first conversation that I had with Mark Abraham, the director, before I even met Tom, was that this Hank Williams thing, if you're going to do it, it's got to be real. It can't be a love note to anybody. It's got to be a true note about what this, you know, really country music's first rock and roll star.
Elizabeth Olsen, known to many fans as the Scarlet Witch in the Marvel Comics universe, plays Hank Williams' wife, Audrey. She says she had to learn how to sing badly, but not too badly, in order to capture Audrey's tone.
The tones of our singing voices, Audrey and I, are very different. But I can tell when she goes flat, and I can tell when it's, you know, her version of a yodel is really just a crack, and trying to capture those sounds that kind of make her sing endearing, and play with it with Rodney and with Mark, and trying to find a balance of bad enough but not so bad that she would be such in denial and he would look like an idiot.
However, Hank Williams's grandson and namesake has criticized the film, saying Hiddleston's singing has no soul. On his Facebook page, Hank 3, as he is known, said it takes an American from the South who has lived and breathed these kinds of roles to make a respectable movie on Hank Sr. Williams suggested Oscar winner Matthew McConaughey. But I Saw the Light director Mark Abraham says that sometimes audience members come to a film with expectations of how it should be done, and that's not always what they see.
I don't know what people sometimes go to movies to expect, and they see a movie and they expect to see a certain kind. This is actually a movie about the trials and tribulations and difficulties and complications of the things that go on behind the scenes, and how those things are the impetus for the great poetry that this man happened to write.
I Saw the Light is rated R for language and some sexual situations. It is distributed by Sony Pictures Classics. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. My thanks to director Tracy Carter and engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Join us again at 0330 Universal Time for the latest on the Wisconsin primaries.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Syrian regime aircraft reportedly violated the month-long cessation of hostilities by bombing the Deir al-Asafir district in southeast Damascus. More than 30 people, including women and children, were killed and dozens were injured. The United States is appalled by aerial strikes of March 31st on a school and hospital in the Damascus suburb. We condemn in the strongest terms any such attacks directed at civilians, said U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby. France also condemned the attack, saying it violated the truce. This abject act is designed to terrorize the Syrian people and sap efforts by the international community to find a political solution, said French Foreign Ministry spokesperson Romain Nadal. In joining the cessation of hostilities, the Syrian regime committed to full implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 2254, which called for an immediate end to any attacks against civilians and for all parties to comply with their obligations under international law. The United States calls for any attacks directed at civilians to stop immediately. As the U.S. continues to support UN-led negotiations towards a political transition that can end the Syrian conflict, we reiterate, said spokesperson Kirby, the need for all parties to the cessation of hostilities to comply with the terms and to observe international law.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.